Every year about this time, 1 week before Christmas, the pressure mounts and many of us begin to worry, obsess actually, about shopping. Have we done enough? Have we purchased the right gifts for each person on our list? Are they wrapped beautifully enough? Will the Postal Service or UPS come through and deliver them on time? Some people I know, consummate type A people, so organized and efficient that they have completed their shopping early online, are sitting back at home with a satisfied smile on their faces, figuratively looking at the rest of us smugly. You know who you are. Others of us, with nerves of steel, haven't even started shopping yet, won't start until early in the coming week, and we'll be rushing to the post office or FedEx requesting overnight delivery. You know who you are, too. The favorite Christmas song, The 12 Days of Christmas, celebrates the happiness and pure fun of impractical gifts. A partridge and a pear tree, two turtle doves, three French hens, ladies dancing, lords a-leaping, pipers piping, and 12 drummers drumming. Not a practical gift in there anywhere, but perhaps some wisdom of true love and its wonderfully impractical, extravagant generosity. There's a deep truth here. When the first years of the Common Era dawned 2,000 years ago, what God's people wanted was consummately practical. They wanted a military and political leader, a charismatic revolutionary who would throw off the yoke of the hated Romans. All they had known was oppression, the utter lack of freedom and dignity and self-determination. And the Roman governor, the officious Roman functionaries, the Roman soldiers walking their streets, bullying, eyeing their women, turning violent at the slightest provocation, were only the most recent of their occupiers and oppressors, going all the way back to Babylon 6 centuries before. And the Jews, through the poetry of the Psalms and the prophetic words of their prophets, longed for, prayed for, hoped for the Messiah to come. Then you spoke in a vision to your faithful one, says Psalm 89. And what is that vision? I have set the crown on one who is mighty. I have exalted one chosen from the people. I have found my servant David. With my holy oil I have anointed him. My hand shall always remain with him. My arm shall strengthen him. The enemy shall not outwit him. The wicked shall not humble him. I will crush his foes before him and strike down those who hate him. My faithfulness and steadfast love shall be with him, and in my name his horn shall be exalted. For centuries, Jews were looking for a Messiah to come and save them, and by that they meant someone like King David, mentioned here in Psalm 89. Or like Judas Maccabeus, whose successful revolt is celebrated at Hanukkah by our Jewish friends this time of year. A Messiah in Jesus' day who would rally and organize and attack and push the Romans and their laws and their unfair taxes and their chariots and swords and helmets and their arrogance into the sea. They longed for, yearned for, prayed for the Messiah, promised by God to come and deliver them and to set them free. It is the great paradox of our history as Christians that when God came, it was not in the way they expected or wanted or even prayed for. It was in an infant, a newborn, the essence of weakness and vulnerability, but also the one human reality that universally calls out of everyone who witnesses it, love, a love that was not there before. Even the psalmist knew about this kind of love, steadfast love, he calls it, embodied, in the promised Messiah. It's in the Bible a lot, incidentally. 180 times the phrase steadfast love is used. There is a wonderful Hebrew word for it, hesed, God's steadfast love, God's compassion, God's uninterrupted, unconditional, eternal love. The root of the word in Hebrew is a mother's womb, God's strong, compassionate, fiercely steadfast love. You know, there is a sense in which we still want a God who will powerfully intercede in human affairs and our personal affairs, to put things right, to bring peace to the world, to establish justice in our city, to heal our diseases and to make us whole. We still, some of us at least, want a practical God, a useful God, a God who is good for something, a divine intervention that will help us with our career, sell our condo, or find a parking space. And the stunning assertion of this season is that God will come to save us and to set us free by calling love out of us. The stunning assertion of Christmas is that God does come to establish justice in our community, fairness in our economic and social structures, even peace in the world, not by an iron fist, not by imperial fiat, not by a list of rules, but by love, by giving us the gift we truly need, the ability to love and to give, and then to do it, the work to establish justice and fairness and peace. You and me, because we know ourselves to be loved and called to live out that kind of fierce, steadfast love every day of our lives. The late Langdon Gilkey, who taught theology at the University of Chicago for many years, said that to be enabled to love is the greatest gift that can be given to us, even more enhancing of the strengths of the self than being loved. We have learned that our fragile grip on life depends on love. We know now that infants need human touch, human presence, holding, cradling, caressing, singing, as desperately as they need food and drink. Christmas reminds us that as desperately as we need to be loved to survive, we need even more to love and to give in order to be human. It's more than survival, to be the men and women and children that God has created us to be. I am convinced that the only hell there is, Dostoevsky once said, is the inability to love. That is the hell Christ came to save us from. And that is the wholeness, the happiness, the joy God gives us in the birth of the child. Fred Buechner wrote a novel once about Brendan, a 6th century Irish saint, Brendan the Navigator, he was called, who spent his entire life sailing in a little boat looking for paradise, which he believed was out over the horizon. And near the end of his life, Brendan has an audience with the revered Welsh monk and mystic Gildas. They talked a long time about the paradise that lies beyond the horizon and Brendan's failure to reach it. And as Brendan is about to leave, Gildas stands up. For the first time, we saw that Gildas wanted one leg, writes Buechner. It was gone from the knee down. He was hopping sideways to reach for the stick in the corner when he lost his balance. He would have fallen in a heap if Brendan hadn't leapt forward and caught him. "I'm as crippled as the dark world," Gildas said. "If it comes to that, which of us isn't, my dear?" Brendan responded. The truth of what Brendan had said stopped all of our mouths. We were cripples, all of us. For a moment or two, there was no sound but the bees. "To lend each other a hand when we're falling," Brendan said. "Perhaps that's the only work that matters in the end." To be enabled to love is the greatest gift given to us, the distinguished theologian said. to be taught to give, and able to give, is the highest and holiest of our humanity. And God set about to do it in the birth of a child, a birth which we will celebrate next week. Thanks be to God. Amen.